Welcome to today's American Association for Respiratory Care's Perspectives podcast with Senior Vice President of Government Affairs, Miriam O'Day. Thanks, Miriam, for joining us today to talk about AARC's recent successes with moving the conversation forward on supplemental oxygen reform and the many steps involved with how a bill becomes a law. To begin, can you give us a brief background on your experience and why you got involved with government affairs work?
So thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. And I'm happy to talk about my engagement with government affairs. I have worked on government affairs for many years. I've worked on public health campaigns, legislative initiatives, including the Affordable Care Act, and also regulatory affairs. And while it seems like government affairs, some of the initiatives move very slowly, it's very satisfying when things get done. And that's one of the things that I enjoy about working in this area. I really, really like working with respiratory therapists because they're highly motivated. They show up and they do the follow through and the follow up that helps to get things done. So it's really great.
Great. Thank you so much. On the note of the recent successes with Supplemental Oxygen Access Reform Act, can you give us a summary of the key objectives and provisions of the act and what inspired the introduction of it?
Certainly. So the SOAR Act was the outcome of a coalition that came together that included patient organizations, professional societies like the AARC, the ATS, the ACCP, and also the durable medical equipment industry. And so having everyone at the table, we developed four pillars that we wanted to see the legislation based on. Those four pillars include the first pillar, which has a patient bill of rights so that patients know how to appeal and what their rights are. It redefines oxygen as supplemental oxygen instead of home oxygen. The second pillar allows for an increased payment for liquid oxygen, which is great for individuals. It's necessary for individuals who require higher flow oxygen. We hope to stimulate liquid oxygen and its availability back into the marketplace with this add-on payment. The third pillar adds a payment for respiratory therapists to do education and see patients in their home. And then the fourth pillar is a standardized template for ordering oxygen and oxygen equipment. Currently, if there is an audit or a question about the patient's prescription or payment, what happens is you have to go back through the physician's medical records, and with this legislation, it would standardize the order and standardize the form with a template.
So what was the process like in getting the SOAR Act introduced, like from when it started in the Senate and then also moved over to the House? Can you walk us through that process and how it goes from conversations all the way through to getting put forth into the House and to the Senate?
Certainly. So our coalition started having meetings with Congress, both in the House and the Senate, about 18 months ago. We had commitments on both sides from the House and the Senate, but we didn't have bipartisan commitments. So we wanted to make sure that the legislation included lead Republicans and lead Democrats as original co-sponsors. So while we had commitments from Republicans in both the Senate and the House, we had to work really hard to bring our Democratic colleagues, their Democratic colleagues along. And so we actually in the House had a commitment last September after the AARC had its fly-in. And it took until we had some additional meetings in March where we actually got a commitment from a Democratic member of Congress. And then we saw the introduction of the legislation the next week. What happens is we had legislation that was based on the four pillars, as I said. And then we had a draft of the legislation that had been agreed upon by all the members of the coalition. We shopped this around to the members of Congress. And then what happens is that legislation, once we have a commitment for an original co-sponsor, that legislation goes through legislative council where it's reviewed to make sure that it's addressing the appropriate sections of the Medicare law. And then we have a legislative draft. and we had the House agree that they would accept the Senate legislative draft. So both chambers have now introduced identical pieces of legislation, which is great because that means that they won't have to go to conference and negotiate between the two bills. Both bills are identical.
So can you tell us a little bit more about what that means when they go to conference and kind of what the next steps are in the process after, you know, things have been introduced, and who also, like, if you could add in who the representatives and the senators are that sponsored the legislation.
So in the Senate, we have leadership from Senator Cassidy. He's a Republican from Louisiana, and he's also a physician. In addition to that, we had Senator Warner, who is a Democrat from Virginia, who said that he would join us on the legislation, and Amy Klobuchar, who is a Democrat from Minnesota. Her husband was on oxygen as a result of being hospitalized for COVID, and so she expressed great interest in being an original co-sponsor. On the House side, we have Congressman Valadeo. He is a Republican from California, and his constituent, Terry Cantu, is a respiratory therapist, and the California State Respiratory Society met with him last September. He made a commitment to be on the legislation, and then we are joined by Congresswoman Brownlee, who is a Democrat from California, and she is also an original co-sponsor.
What do you think helped shift the trajectory of this bill after so many years of discussion about it?
Honestly, it really is just follow-up, follow-up, follow-up. We had a lot of meetings. We had a lot of members who made commitments that they would join us on the legislation. For instance, Congressman Bouchon is an original co-sponsor on the legislation. But many of the offices that we would look to who are in positions of leadership have made a lot of commitments, and their plates are full. So we're really trying to find members who we can engage on this issue and then get them to take this on as an initiative. You know, the next steps are that we will work really hard to get a lot of co-sponsors on the legislation in both the House and the Senate. And this is an action that members and their staff have to take. They have to, you know, it's a lot different than sitting in a meeting and listening to an issue. They have to actually take an action to become a co-sponsor. And then the lead Democrats and the lead Republicans on these pieces of legislation have to liaise with those offices and enroll them as co-sponsors on the bill. We hope to get a lot of co-sponsors on the legislation because, as we know, in the most recent sessions of Congress, we haven't had a lot of pieces of legislation that pass independently on their own. They're usually attached to another, what we call another vehicle, which is leaving the station, as we say. So we know that there will be a piece of Medicare legislation, and we hope that this SOAR Act will be attached to the Medicare legislation when it's introduced.
You've kind of talked about this, but what role did advocacy groups, stakeholders, and experts play in shaping the content and scope of the SOAR Act?
It's 100% based on input from advocacy groups. So we got together and discussed and negotiated with one another what we felt would be meaningful Medicare oxygen payment reform, and that's what the legislation is based on.
How do you go about creating that coalition of advocacy groups?
So a number of these groups have worked together very closely for a lot of years. We worked on a lot of different initiatives together. So many of the Washington, D.C. representatives already know one another and have known one another for a long time. One of the things that we worked on successfully together was making pulmonary rehabilitation a permanent benefit within Medicare, for instance, in the past. And so We actually came together under the American Thoracic Society's Special Interest Group on Oxygen. That's a group that's led by Susan Jacobs. She's a nurse. She's at Stanford. And the working group on policy grew out of that group, out of the ATS-SIG on oxygen. The beauty of this is that I inherited this project from Amory Hummel, who spent a long time working with the policy group and helping to shape the legislation. And as many people know, she retired, but she was one of the country's leading experts in CMS and reimbursement for all things pulmonary.
What have been some of the reactions and responses from the public and the media or even other stakeholders on the SOAR Act?
So what we like to say in DC is that the legislation has no known opposition. So there isn't anyone that's opposed to it. And as far as we can tell, every stakeholder has been engaged and is on board with us. The public response has been terrific. I have regular interactions with patients and patient organizations. They're absolutely thrilled about this. They're asking for ways to get more involved and more engaged in building co-sponsorship. The professional societies are happy with this legislation. It gives the communities a chance to come together and to introduce solutions for patients, but also to enhance access to respiratory therapists in a home-based setting.
What do you think are the next steps that you'd like to see ARC members or other advocates in the public doing to get the SOAR Act across the finish line and enacted into law?
We would really like to see our membership call their congressional offices, ask their members to co-sponsor this legislation. We would really like to hear from our members, from our respiratory therapists, if they have patients that they know who have had access problems, because we'd like to highlight those patient stories as we have meetings on Capitol Hill. We've got our fly-in taking place May 6th and May 7th. On the 6th of May, we'll be having an advocacy training and a briefing on our issues. And on the 7th, we hope to have more meetings this year than we had last year. Last year, we had almost 230 congressional appointments in both the House and the Senate, where we educated members of Congress and their staff about this issue and the need for legislative reform. Now we'll be back this year with legislation to ask them to co-sponsor in the hope that we can get this attached to the Medicare reform legislation. So in May, we'll be taken to the streets, we'll be taken to the Hill, and hopefully we'll build a large cohort of co-sponsors on this legislation so that it will come to the attention of congressional leadership and be attached to a Medicare package.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the respiratory care fly-in and why it's so important to not only our advocacy efforts, but oxygen reform in general and other respiratory issues?
So what I like to say is that members of Congress make decisions every day on behalf of citizens, on behalf of their constituents. And it's important that they hear from their constituents about issues that are of importance to them. And I think respiratory therapists have a great story to tell about access to care for patients, but also about what they do and how important their role is in pulmonary care for individuals with respiratory diseases. Lobbyist is sometimes used as a dirty word. People talk about Washington as the swamp. And in my opinion, being a lobbyist is an important role that you play in educating people about things that they may not have heard about. So while we had virtual meetings during COVID, we had a lot of virtual appointments. We weren't able to move the needle the same way that you can when you're face-to-face with people. As I told you, we enrolled the Democratic lead co-sponsor in the House after Mike Madison and myself along with Jim Romano, who was representing a patient organization, individuals who have Alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency in the Alpha-1 Foundation, along with Stephanie Reinhart from CRD, were able to meet face-to-face. And it was that face-to-face meeting that really changed the face of this legislation and got a Democratic co-sponsor so that we have the legislation now introduced in the House. And again, a lot of the good work that's been done to enroll members of Congress and get their support have been the result of face-to-face meetings that have taken place with representatives from our coalition, including a lot of patients who have come to Washington and had meetings, pulmonary fibrosis patients, COPD patients. We have the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation, the COPD Foundation, the American Lung Association, who are part of our coalition, and they've had ongoing meetings on Capitol Hill and come to tell their stories. And it's very, very impactful when you have individuals who are struggling to breathe talk about their need for access to oxygen and oxygen therapy.
Great. Thank you so much for this overview of the SOAR Act and all of AARC's other legislative efforts. Do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share about next steps or just the legislative process in general?
I think that what I can't emphasize enough is learning to tell your story and learning how to tell it in a very short and concise way. And then secondly, doing the follow-up. Remember that you're asking a congressional office who may meet with 10 people a day on 10 different issues to take action on our issues. And so sometimes the follow-up requires maybe 3, 4, 5 emails or additional contact after you've had a face-to-face meeting. So follow up. And we're going to get this done. We're going to deliver it for respiratory therapists and for patients who need access to respiratory therapists.
Great. Thank you so much, Miriam, for sharing this story with us today. We appreciate your time.